Let's open up our Bibles to the book of Numbers chapter 19. Numbers chapter 19. And what we're actually going to do is we're going to go backwards this evening. And what I mean by that is Numbers chapter 19 is a very unique chapter in all the Bible. It's the only chapter in the Bible that talks about what's called the red heifer. How many of you heard that term, the red heifer? And you're going to hear that term even more and more prophetically. I'm going to share, watch, well, I'm going to go backwards. I'm going to talk to you for just a few moments. I'm going to show you a clip about the red heifer in our day. And then we're going to go back to the original introduction of the red heifer and what that red heifer ministry meant, what it means, where we're going, those kinds of things. It's only talked about in one chapter in the Old Testament and one verse in the New Testament. We'll get to that verse on Sunday because we won't get through it all here because there's a lot of chapters I want to cover tonight, just kind of highlighting some things. And then on Sunday morning, we'll kind of spend a little bit more time in this particular thing on chapter 19 this Sunday than in a couple weeks on chapter 20. But the red heifer, for a lot of people, are really looking forward to the red heifer showing up again because we haven't had a red heifer in over 2,000 years identified. And one of the reasons for that, as I'll show you in just a few moments, is it has a lot to do with the Orthodox Jewish religious pursuits. And there are many that believe that in order for Messiah to return, there has to be a red heifer on the earth. Now, that's not what I believe at all. I believe he can come at any moment, okay? But concerning our Jewish friends, that is one of the things they're looking for as a sign of the really, they're actually waiting for Messiah to come back the first time. You see, when he comes back for them, they're going to say, welcome, and we're going to say, welcome back, all right? In dealing with this particular subject, it's a real sensitive because historically there's only been recorded 9 that have been ever been used from the time of Numbers chapter 19 until 70 AD. And so according to their tradition, according to one of their rabbinical teachers, he prophesied that when the 10th one shows up, only Messiah will be there to be able to do with this heifer what we're going to be reading about in just a few moments. And so, and from the first one that's selected that we're going to be reading about tonight, what they would do is at the conclusion of the treatment which we're going to be reading about, they would take the ashes and they would use these ashes. But then when the ashes got to a certain point where they're just about done, they would take one pinch out of that ash to have it for the next red heifer, and then because that pinch is in with that ashes, they say it's still the same red, kind of like you ladies that make food and you take a pinch of something and you stick it with one loaf to keep it going. And so that was the idea from the days of Moses originally until 70 AD. So what happened in 70 AD? Well, in 70 AD, Jerusalem was destroyed. And when Jerusalem was destroyed, the temple was destroyed. And in 70 AD, they could no longer find the Ark of the Covenant. They could no longer find the jar which contained these red heifer ashes. And so we don't know if they were destroyed. Most people believe that they were taken out secretly before that because they knew what was coming, and that there's actually some people that actually believe that they know where the jar of these red heifer remnants are. Some believe they're out in Qumran and they've used satellite imagery and all these kinds of things and really getting into it and raising a lot of money for the Temple Institute at the same time. And so I don't want to get terribly distracted with those things, because we're not looking for a female cow, we're looking for our Savior to return, amen? But I just want to share with you that, you know, prophecy is exciting for a lot of folks. They really, you know, some of you are not going to sleep tonight because you're going to be going to thetempleinstitute.org, you're going to be reading all about this kind of stuff, you're going to spend the rest of your night doing that. All right, so anyways, that's just what's happening, okay? Let's turn to Numbers chapter 19. Let's go to the beginning. What was the purpose of all this initially? This is a very interesting sacrifice. What's interesting about this is that Moses doesn't mention this red heifer in Exodus. He doesn't mention this red heifer in Leviticus. As a matter of fact, when does he bring up this ministry of the red heifer? After it's already been determined that there's going to be a new priesthood coming one day. Why? Because all those men of the age of 20 and older rebelled against God. Guess who was 20 and older during the rebellion? Moses, Aaron, his sons. And so God is also preparing them for a future in the promised land. And there's some things that are going to be happening. Also, I want you to think about this. As we travel tonight, we're going to travel through 38 years in between chapter 19 and 20. Almost 37 and a half years are going to go by. And at the conclusion of that, when we get to chapter 20, these people are going to move from wandering into the wilderness to marching into the promised land. And marching into the promised land also has to deal with some, warfare, both spiritual and physical warfare. And this is an amazing thing to assist them in that. Let's read about it instead of talking about it. Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "This is the ordinance of the law of which the Lord has commanded, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they bring you a red heifer without blemish, in which there is no defect, and on which a yoke has never come." And as we look at this, it's interesting that this particular red heifer that's going to be offered, by the way, it's a heifer. What does that mean? Is it male or female? Very good. You're from the North State, all right? It's a female offering to the Lord. That's rare, okay? There are offerings that were taught in Leviticus that have the option of being male or female. But in particular, this is really unique in that, number one, it has to be a female. Again, look at it. It has to be a female. It has to be red, all right? It has to be without blemish. That's not, that goes in line with everything else. It has to have no defect. That goes in line with everything else. In which a yoke has never come. And the idea here, and especially with the video I just showed you, they believe that this particular heifer has to be sacrificed before the age of 3. Not so young that it can't do anything, but not so old that it's beyond that. So that's why some people get real excited when they see these things and think, wow, that means Messiah is going to return within the next 3 years. What does the Bible say about dates and times? Be very careful, all right? Don't get caught up in that, all right? Especially, we should be looking not for the Antichrist, not for a red heifer, but for our Redeemer. If you want to look up for anything, look for him. Be ready, all right? But so there are people that get excited about these things. But in particular, this is an interesting sacrifice because this is an animal, this female animal is going to be offered to the Lord, but not for atonement. The blood of this animal is not for atonement, but it's for cleansing so that we can come before the Lord. It's a whole different thing. It's why it's so unique. You shall give it to Eleazar, the priest. Why Eleazar, the priest? Because Aaron's 123, and he's about to die, all right? So God's very practical. That he may take it outside the camp, and it shall be slaughtered before him. Now, this word slaughtered here is a different word in the Hebrew language than the word slaughtered in the other offerings. That means to be butchered, all right? This animal is not to be butchered at all, as we'll see in just a few moments. But the life is to be taken away from this animal. Look what happens. And Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood with its finger. Remember the other offerings, they would come with a knife. They would, kind of cut the throat and put what? A basin and catch the blood. This is not that way at all. This one, the slaughtering takes place and Eleazar just gets a little bit of blood so he can dip it 7 times toward the tabernacle. That's important. Remember that. Toward the direction of the tabernacle. It's a mobile cleansing is what I want you to hear tonight. So, Eleazar the priest will take some of its blood with his finger, sprinkle some of its times 7 times directly in front of the tabernacle meeting. Then the heifer shall be burned in his sight. How much of it? Well, all of it. Its hide, its flesh, its blood, all that awful stuff inside, okay, shall be burned. And then while it's being burned, you'll place on this animal that's being burned, the priest shall take the cedar wood, the hyssop, and the scarlet, cast them into the midst of the fire, burning the heifer. Get the idea? So it's being sacrificed, and then a little bit of cedar, a little bit of hyssop, and a little bit of scarlet. If that sounds familiar, you might remember as we were going through the book of Leviticus, These are the things that were to be offered when there was to be cleansing for a leper. By the way, what's our biggest problem? Sin. Sin is described as what? Leprosy. Okay? It's a cleansing that we're talking about here. Then there's about three guys that are involved in this. All right? So first comes to the priest. Well, then the priest shall wash his clothes. He shall bathe in water, and afterward he shall come into the camp. The priest then shall be unclean until evening. And the one who burns it, this is another person, all right? So the priest receives it, takes it outside of camp. Now he's been defiled. Why? Because this animal represents defilement that's going to be used to bring cleansing. So now he's been defiled, so he's got to wash his clothes. He gives it to the next guy, and then the priest, and then the one who burns it shall wash his clothes in water, bathe in water, and shall be unclean until evening. Then another guy, a man who is clean, shall gather up the ashes of the heifer, store them where? Outside the camp in a clean place, and they shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel for the water of purification. It is for purifying for sin, not making you one with God, but just cleansing, okay? It's a purification. And the one who gathers, okay, the third guy, the one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes, be unclean till evening, and it shall be a statute forever to the children of Israel and no longer and to the stranger who dwells among them. Now listen, so how can you become unclean? How can you qualify, and sadly enough, you know, how do I qualify? How do I get messed up that I need this cleansing? Well, here's some ways. Verse 11. He who touches the dead body of anyone shall be unclean 7 days. So first off, if someone dies near you, you touch them, you're automatically unclean for how long? So what do you do? Well, he shall purify himself with water on the third day and then on the seventh day. And then what will happen? He will be clean. But if he does not purify himself on the third day and on the seventh day, he will not be clean. Whoever touches the body of anyone who has died and does not purify himself defiles the tabernacle of the Lord. That person shall be cut off from Israel. He shall be unclean because the water of purification was not sprinkled on him, and his uncleanness is still on him. Now listen, gang, they're not bathing in these ashes. It's just a sprinkle of the ash is put in this water, and they're sprinkled with it. Okay, get the idea here? That's why, you know, 10 of these heifers can go from the days of Moses, or 9, from the days of Moses to 70 AD, because they just a little sprinkle here, you know, those kinds of things. Get the idea? All right. What about this person? What if a man, what if a man dies in a tent? By the way, where are these people living? In tents, in the wilderness. They're traveling, right? All right. So all who come into the tent, all who are in the tent shall be unclean for 7 days. By the way, every open vessel which has no cover fastened on it, guess what? It's unclean. All those things inside the tent. Whoever in the open field touches one who was slain by a sword, who has died, or a bone of a man or a grave shall be unclean 7 days. Why do you think that's put in there? Because they're marching to the promised land, and marching towards the promised land, not as there's spiritual warfare, but there's what? Physical warfare. So when you're in battle, you're going to be touching someone, you're going to be burying people, you're going to be walking through places where people have died before. Well, there's a time to wait, rest, heal, get clean. For any unclean person, they shall take some of the ashes of the burnt heifer, the heifer burnt, for purification from sin. And running water shall be put into a vessel. So they would take a sprinkle of the ash, put it in a vessel. Then the running living water has to touch those ashes, and it becomes kind of a mixture for them. Get the idea here? All right? A clean person shall take hyssop, dip it in the water, sprinkle it on the tent, on all the vessels, and the person who were there, or on the one who touched a bone, the slain, the dead, or the grave. So then they take that solution, take some hyssop, right, and just begin to sprinkle it. All right? They're not touching the unclean person still, because that's a process. The clean person shall sprinkle the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day. I love that. You know what they're saying? You got to be fully committed to this cleansing. You can't go partially into it, think, I think that's good enough. No, you're either all in or not in at all. The person, clean person, shall sprinkle the unclean on the third day, on the seventh day. On the seventh day, he shall purify himself, wash his clothes, bathe in water, and at the evening, they shall be clean. So what we have here also, along with this cleansing to go into tabernacle for the priest to serve, we also have a portable cleansing ministry while they're marching into the promised land. I like that. I like that. God is willing to go where you go. God is willing to meet you where you're at. There's no excuse for not getting right with God. Are you hearing this? He makes it possible for us all to be redeemed and clean before him. I love this. Well, what about people that choose not to? Well, the man who is unclean and does not purify himself, that person shall be cut off from among the assembly because he has defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. The water of purification has not been sprinkled on him. He is unclean. It is a perpetual statute for them. That means it's going to go on and on. By the way, since the year 70 AD, has this taken place? No, that's why there's a hunger, there's a passion, there's a desire. That's why he was sharing in this little video about so looking forward to Ezekiel 36 being fulfilled. But we know the last verse of Ezekiel chapter 39 says, there's a reason why our Jewish friends aren't coming to the Lord. It says, because the face of God has been what? Hidden. But in chapter 40, you know, chapter 39, the last verse, I forget what the number of the verse is. He says, I will hide my face no more. Then chapter 40, we go into the preparation for the new temple. That's why they're so excited saying, come, come. Well, what about someone who says, no, I don't need this. Let's continue reading verse 21. It's a perpetual statute for them, and he who sprinkles the water of purification shall wash his clothes, and he who touches the water of purification shall be unclean until evening. Whatever the person unclean touches shall be unclean, and the person who touches it shall be unclean until evening. And now, as we come to chapter 20, again, I'm just kind of going through this because we'll spend more time on chapters 19 and 20 on Sunday mornings, okay? But I just want to get through this tonight, not to just get through it, but I want you to know what I'm doing. There's a purpose behind it, okay? Between chapter 19, actually, if you want to go back, between chapter 10, verse 11, to chapter 20, verse 1, we have about a 37-year period of recorded history with no events really taking place. Because what was happening? Not a whole lot. For 37 years, they're wandering in a circle, actually. As a matter of fact, can we put that first map up, and we'll just leave that up for most of the evening. Patty, thank you, and I'll let you know when we'll change it, the first one. And so, basically, for 37 years, I got to find my little helper here. Oh, here it is. For 37 years, they're going around in a circle. Ladies, you think your husband? How'd you like to follow Moses? It's like, dude, just pull over. Ask somebody over here. You know, no, I can find it. I know I can. But initially, they started down here. They came up. They sent the spies up, remember? Then the spies came back, and they said, we don't think we can take this land. So God says, fine. You still got too much of Egypt in you? Let's see if we can get a little Egypt out of you for 30, get that out of there, get for 37 and a half years, all right? This is where they are. You know, what a sad commentary on most of our lives. If we're not living a faith-filled life, we're living a life that really has no record of life worth recording. They're just kind of living life. Where's your passion for Jesus? Hey, if we're going out, let's go out with style. I mean, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all right, just grab your neighbor if they're not saved. And just say, what about now? You know, I'm not that strong. What about now? I can hold you for a moment, but what about, hey. Or are we just going to say, well, I hope he comes back quickly. And 37 years go by, and nothing really is recorded in your life that's taken place. Isn't that a tragic scenario between chapter 19 and 20? Nothing. Except, I will say this, as I mentioned to you, I'm just guessing, about 50 funerals a day for those 37 years. Every seven, you know, every few hours, another funeral, another funeral, another funeral. Interesting. Well, then the children of Israel and the whole congregation came to the wilderness of Zin. Now there's a wilderness of Sin and there's a wilderness of Zin. All right. These are two different places. All right. Now they're coming into this area. All right. By the way, this map is, it's not as clear as I like it to be for you, but you're just going to have to trust me. This is the wilderness of Zin. This is the wandering, okay? We're about to read, before this chapter is over, that they're going to try and go up here, okay? They're going to try and make a move. So, but while they're in the wilderness, it's the first month. And the people stayed in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. We don't know how old Miriam was, okay? We know that Aaron's 3 years older than his brother, all right? So at this point, Moses is 120. Aaron's 123, all right? Not quite that age. He dies at 123, and so that makes Aaron about 100, all right? We don't know how old his sister is. She must have been in great shape, all right? If I had to guess, because remember, when Moses was born, he's the one that talked Pharaoh's daughter into adopting him. So I would imagine she must have been at least 10, when you guess, maybe 13, 14 at that age. So here she is. She's probably 130. You know, she's given it all she got, and she passes away. And what a beautiful life. What a beautiful life. The first prophetess acknowledged in the Bible. She danced. She sang. She was feisty. She would get into her little brother's face. She had leprosy. She lived. But she also wandered. And she also died. Why? Because, well, when you're a leader, you're part of what's going on. And she passes away. Well, guess what? There was no water for the congregation. So they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord in this wilderness, and that we, our animals, should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It's not a place of grain or figs or vine pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink." Moses and Aaron, I love these guys. When trouble comes, what do? They hit their face and the glory of God shows up. They fall on their faces, and again, what happens? The glory of God shows up. By the way, he has a rather strange response. But before we read the response of Moses to their requests, may I remind you, he's 120. He's probably a little grumpy. He's been with them the last 37 and a half years. His sister just died. Sometimes people's timing's a little bit off. We need to be more sensitive to allow people to grieve and allow people to live life. But they're more concerned with the today and what about me than you and how you're doing. And so they confront him. And he tries to really respond first in a way that would honor God. But you know what? All of us have a little bit of flesh in us, don't we? And Moses and Aaron, they gather together and go before God. Well, verse 7. Well, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take the rod." And the reason I'm going to mention the rod is I'm not thoroughly convinced whose rod this is. And I'll tell you why. It could be the rod of Moses that parted the Red Sea. You know what I'm saying? It could be the rod of Moses that hit a rock and opened it up. Or it could be Aaron's rod that had just budded earlier in another chapter. And the reason I bring that to your attention, we'll talk about more of that when we get in this chapter, but it's something interesting because as you read through these verses, at one moment I go, "I know which rod it is." Then I read another part, I go, "Oh, I'm not really sure whose rod this is." So let's just read it and see what happens. So the Lord said, "Take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together. Speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water from out of the rock, give drink to the congregation and their animals. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded him. See why I'm a little bit confused here? Is it Aaron's rod, or was it the rod that was in the Holy of Holies that he went to get? Okay? I guess maybe the better message is take a resurrected rod, which represents you, that resurrected life. We'll talk about that later. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he commanded. And Moses, he gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Again, he's a little cranky. Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. Well, then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron. See, some of us think, wouldn't it be great to be a leader for God? Yes, there's great blessing, but there's also great responsibility. The Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron. By the way, what just happened? The thirsty people had their thirst quenched. He met their whining needs. By the way, does this story sound a little bit familiar? Their forefathers did this same thing 38 years before, which is a message. How much change really happens with mankind? That's why for some of you that have put your hope in politics, goes round and round and round and round and round and round. Every group says, hey, we're really going to bring change. Oh, no, now it's our turn. We're really going to bring change. Do you have any change in your pockets left anymore? I don't think so. And so there has been change, I guess. So let's get back to Bible. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, because you did not believe to hollow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. And this water of Meribah, this place of contention, that's what we're going to call this, because the children of Israel contended with the Lord, and he is hallowed among them. But you boys, you just blew it. Well, Moses, he sent messengers from Kadesh to the king of Edom. There's a verse in the Bible that a lot of people don't like. It's actually two verses. It's found in Malachi. In Malachi chapter 1, let me read to you verses 2 and 3. "I have loved you, said the Lord. Yet you say, in what way have you loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother, says the Lord? Yet Jacob I have loved, but Esau I have hated, and laid waste his mountains and his heritage for the jackals of the wilderness." And there's a lot of people that get messed up on verses like this. They say, well, that is just a horrible verse. How in the world could he say something like this? I love Jacob, but I hated Esau. May I remind you, Isaiah tells us that God sees things from the end to the beginning. By the way, who is Esau? Edom. Same names. Esau was called Edom when he made that red stew for his brother. He sold his birthright for some red stew, and so his name was called Edom. So these are descendants of Esau. They're Edomites. Moses is a descendant from Jacob or Israel, all right? So these are family members. But you know what God saw way back when those two boys were in the womb of their mother? You know what? Esau I've hated, but Jacob I've loved. Why? Because he knew down the road the events that we're about to read would take place. So Moses sends a messenger to the king of Edom. "Thus says your brother Israel." Isn't that interesting? Originally it was Esau and Jacob. Now Edom and Israel are talking. They both had their name changed, all right? Thus, your brother Israel, you know all the hardships that has befallen us, how our fathers went down to Egypt, how we dwelt in Egypt a long time when the Egyptians afflicted us and our fathers. And we cried out to the Lord. He heard our voice and sent the angel and brought us up out of Egypt. Now here we are in Kadesh, a city on the edge of your border. Please let us pass through your country. We will not pass through fields or vineyards. We won't drink water from the wells. We will go along the king's highway. By the way, that's probably the oldest highway on earth that went through from Egypt all the way up to the Mesopotamia. Okay? It's there today. It's paved today. But it's there today. It's on the east side of the Jordan. All right? We will not turn aside. And by the way, why do I mention that? Because sometimes we have these weird visions in our mind about biblical times. You know, we think, wow, how is Paul able to go around the world? He was on a major Roman highway that's smoother than I-5, okay? These people, you know, they were brilliant. They figured things out. So they had highways back then. We will not turn aside to the right or to the left until we have passed through your territory. Well, then Edom said to him, this is why God said what he said in Malachi. You shall not pass through my land, lest I come out against you with a sword. So the children of Israel said to him, we will go by the highway, and if I or my livestock drink any of your water, then I'll pay for it. Let me only pass through on foot, nothing more. Then he said, you shall not pass through. So Edom came out against them, and many men in a strong hand. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through his territory. Well, the children of Israel, the whole congregation, journeyed from Kadesh, and they came to Mount Hor. So basically, they've been in this area, all right? And they're about to come alongside and come up to this area, all right? This is where we're reading right now. They're saying, well, let's go to Mount Hor. And Mount Hor is in this area, we believe. No one knows for sure, but we believe it's in this area. So they're beginning to make their way up to where the Edomites were. What took place? And they came to Mount Hor. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in Mount Hor by the border of the land of Edom, all right? Saying, Aaron shall be gathered to his people, for he should not enter the land which I have given to the children of Israel, because you rebelled against my word at the water of Meribah. And he says to Aaron, take Aaron and Eleazar his son, bring them up to the Mount Hor, strip Aaron of his garments, and put them on Eleazar, his son. For Aaron shall be gathered to his people and die there. I love the way the Old Testament talks about death. You see, when we pass away, we're not lost. I love this phrase. And Aaron was, look at it, gathered to his people. When my daddy passed away this last July 5th, he wasn't lost. He was gathered with his mother, his father, other family members. Gang, when we take our last breath here, may we gather with our people with the Lord. And may we be willing to take what God has given us. Listen to this, please. And pass it on with great grace and love to our children. Let me ask you a question. What ministry are you passing on to your sons and daughters? I'm not saying being on a platform, standing behind a pulpit. I'm saying life with God. Give it away. When your day comes, give it away. And that's exactly what happened. So Moses did just as the Lord had commanded. He went up on the Mount of Hor in the sight of all the congregation. And Moses stripped Aaron. And he put the garments on Eleazar, his son. And Aaron died there on the top of the mountain. Then Moses and Eleazar came down from the mountain. Isn't that interesting? Here we go. Three guys go up, two guys come back. And now when all the congregation saw that Aaron was dead, all the house of Israel mourned for Aaron for 30 days. I like that. It is good to respect and honor people, isn't it? Can I say this? Give it a time, but don't live there. For those of you that maybe you've gone through a loss, and if I sat with you after loss, you know what I said to you. You will heal. I promise you, you will heal if you'll allow God to heal. And then I've also said this to you. Allow everybody in your family to heal at God's timing. Don't expect everybody to heal the same timetable as you. Some heal faster, some heal slower. But there is a time when you will be healed and keep moving forward. Is it wrong to weep? No. They told Jesus John the Baptist had been beheaded. You know what it says? He went to a quiet place by himself and he wept. Lazarus, your friend, is dead. He wept. It's okay to weep over that. It's okay. But we're going to be gathered to our people. That's what we ought to be honoring. Now, before we get to the next chapter, and we will get through chapter 21, because I'm going to take about 5 minutes, I promise. Well, something like that. I want you to consider what just happened to Moses. He just in this last chapter, he's been to two funerals. He's dealt with two confrontations. Personal failure. He's a leader. And leading days are tough. But when it's time to get back to work, he gets back to work. John Wesley said this, God buries his workmen, but his work goes on. And may I say to you, when you have some tough days, some tough years, some tough centuries, because some of it's a long time, you're not done till God says you're done. You may deal with death. You may deal with personal failures. You may deal with confrontations, but don't give up. Keep pressing in. Well, the king of Arad, the Canaanite, who dwelt in the south, he heard that Israel was coming on the road of Athraim. So this is the road. They're coming up here. And Arad is actually right here. And I have great memories there. I've spent a couple nights in Arad. Just real quick, I think I have time to do this. The first night I spent there with a group of pastors. I think Pastor David was with us. And that's where we spent the night with the camels the night before. And all I remember is Dennis McGowan was there also. And halfway through the night, I hear this meow. And apparently this kitten had gotten on his head. He thought it was a rat. And I look up and see this kitten flying across. Because we're in this Bedouin tent. There's 20 guys sleeping in this tent. And it was cold. And so this is the first time that most of these guys had ever ridden camels. And so we get there, and I guess we're not going to get through chapter 21, but anyways, we'd like to hear the story. So we get there, and the camel guide comes to me, and he wants to talk to me privately. Well, we're in a big room, and all these guys are close by, and pastors are busybodies anyway, so they're listening to the conversation. He says, hi, I'm your guide. I'm going to be taking you out tomorrow. He says, now listen, you have two choices, but you only have two choices. You can go on a 45-minute, ride or a two-hour ride. And I said, well, you're the professional. Look at us. What do you think? He goes, I think 45 is just about enough. And so I said, okay, you're the professional. And so I turned, Pastor Larry Ashley was with us on this trip too, and so he was there. And so I come back, and these guys going, what do you mean 45? We want to go 2 hours. I go, he's the professional. I'm not a camel jockey. Oh, so these guys are frustrated. 7 minutes on the camel, they're crying like babies. This hurts. This is painful. So then 2 years later, we go back again. This time I've got Pastor Pete and Dave Bruno with me. And this time it had snowed in this area. And the camels were a little bit kind of edgy. And so we came to this one dry riverbed. And I'm not kidding. It was maybe from this step to the floor all. And so Pete and Dave Bruno are on this camel. It was a two-humper. Okay. So, Dave's on the back, Pete's on the front. And you sit like this. And by the way, it is painful because there's no stirrups. And you can't get nothing. You're just at gravity and pain. And all of a sudden, because it doesn't snow a lot in Arad, but it had this time, and this camel is finicky. And this camel, and they have a weird gait. They don't have like a horse gait. And it went off. How many of you have seen that movie Bambi? I'm dead serious. And by the way, camels have a hump on their belly also, all right? This camel went down just like Bambi on ice in the cartoon. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen. All four legs went straight out in every direction. It's like, now, Pete, he grew up with cows, so he just dismounted. Bruno, he's a city guy. He got off like a little girl. So I have great memories in Arad. It's right here. Okay, so let's get back to Bible. And I'm sure they weren't screaming and stuff, but when you see him, just say, I heard you were in Arad. How was the camping? Anyways, Well, then he fought against them, and Israel took some of them prisoners. So Israel made a vow to the Lord. If you, get back to the Bible. Come with me, okay? If you will indeed deliver this people into my hand, I will utterly destroy their cities. And so the Lord listened, and the voice of Israel delivered up the Canaanites, and they utterly destroyed them and their cities. And they named that place Hormah, or that place of destruction. So this is where they get right here. But then something happens right here. By the way, I believe personally, me and others, I would agree, Moses made a major mistake here. The major mistake was simply this. Why did he ask the king of Edom for permission? When God gives you a promise, follow him. He should have just kept watching the cloud. And then I think it's at this point, this is where some people really get frustrated, because he realizes also, you know what? I'm not going to be able to take this land from the south. So now they have to backtrack. And he realizes he's going to have to take the land from another direction. Think about that. These people, 37 and a half years here, they're dizzy. They go, great, finally we're going in. They get up here and they realize, oops. Why am I saying this? Leaders aren't called to be perfect. We're just called to be pliable, okay? Yeah, we make mistakes. We make decisions. You know, I guess we should. I'd rather follow a leader that admits his mistakes than try to fake past it. Well, God really wanted us to do this. No, he didn't. You took your eyes off the cloud for a moment and started looking towards man. And God helped you. Well, real quickly, chapter 21, here we go. They journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom. So now, see, they're coming back, and they're going to come all the way down here and work their way up, okay? And so the people, they were discouraged along the way. Sure they were. Turn around, really? Again? Are we going to go in circles? And the people spoke against God and against Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there's no food, no water. Our soul loathes this worthless bread. Uh-oh. Don't mess with the manna bread, all right? Not a good thing. So the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people. They bit the people, and many of the people died. They died right there. And Moses, you know, the people came before Moses and said, we've sinned. Yeah, for we have spoken against the Lord, against you. Pray to the Lord that he may take away the serpents from us. So Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said to Moses, make a fiery serpent. Set it on a pole. It shall be that everyone who is bitten, when he looks at it, shall live. So Moses made a bronze serpent, put it on a pole, so it was. If the serpent had bitten anyone, he who looked at the bronze serpent, he lived. And of course, we know Jesus, after talking to Nick at night, said, I be high and lifted up. How many of you are in the medical field? Any nurses here? Okay. When you got pinned, what'd they give you? That symbol there. They'll tell you in medical school, I think it's like Greek or Latin. No, it's not. It's Bible. It goes all the way back here. That God is the one that saves people from sickness. And what a joy it is to know believers wearing those pins and they're praying for you and working on you in the hospital. Well, the children of Israel, they moved on. I'm going to put it in hyperspeed here for a second. And they journeyed from Oboth, and they camped at Irzurum in the wilderness, which is east of Moab toward the sunrise. So now, they're coming. Here's Moab. Okay, here's Edom. Here's Moab. Okay, you can't really see it very clearly, but now they're coming because the sun comes up this way, okay? So now they're making their way up, and there's these different battles that they're going to have in these special places. Well, now they're on the other side. And so from there they moved and camped in the Valley of Zered. From there they moved and camped on the other side of the Arnon. And here's, you can't really see it, but the Arnon River is in this area right here, okay? And so they moved to the camp on the other side of the Arnon, which is the wilderness that extends from the border of the Amorites. For the Arnon is the border of Moab between the Moab and the Amorites. Therefore, it's said in the book of wars of the Lord. Okay, did you know there was a book of wars? Neither did I, because we don't have it. For whatever reason, it wasn't preserved, but God has a book of some beautiful books, okay? What happened in the book of wars? Well, it tells us. Wahub and Zuphah, the brooks of Arnon, the slope of the brooks that reaches to the dwelling of Ar. There was pirates there. And they lies on the border of Moab. For there they went to have a beer, which is there, well, actually beer means the well, okay? Which is the well where the Lord said to Moses, gather the people together and I will give them water. And Israel sang a song, spring up, O well. Remember that song? Splish, splash. All of you sing it. So the well and the leaders sank, dug by the nations' nobles, by the lawgiver and their strength. and their staves. And the wilderness, from the wilderness they went to Matana, from Matana to Nethiel, from Nethiel to Bamoth, from Bamoth in the valley that is in the country of Moab, to the top of Pisgah. Which Pisgah? Mount Nebo. Same place, okay? All right, where are they now? It's in this area right here, because you can see it, okay? Yep. I'll get a better map next week, I promise. And so they're now, by the way, when I say Pisgah or Mount Nebo, why is that a familiar name to some of you? Because that's where Moses will die, all right? We'll get to that another time. Well, while they're there, Israel sent messengers to Sihon, king of the Amorites. Guess what they do? Same old thing. Let me pass through your land. We will not drink of your water. We'll stay on the highway. Please, you know, let us through. Verse 23. But Sihon would not allow Israel to pass through his territory. So Sihon gathered all his people together, went out against Israel in the wilderness, and he came to Jahaz and fought against Israel. Then Israel defeated him with the edge of the sword, took possessions of his land from Arnon to Jabbok, all the way basically from down here, all the way up here. They're taking all the, here's the Arnon River, and it goes all the way. Can you go to the next map real quick, Patty? Okay, so starting down here, here's the Arnon River, going all the way from here, this whole section. I mean, they're just winning battles and burying the enemy, okay? And and for the border of the people of Arnon was fortified, strong folks. By the way, there was another reason that they didn't mess with the Ammonites, okay? In Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 19, listen to what it says. And when you come near the people of Ammon, do not harass them or meddle with them, for I will not give you any of the land of the people of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the descendants of Lot as a possession. Okay? So that's why they just took certain, here's Ammon, they just took certain areas. He said, don't mess with this. Okay? So, Israel took all these cities, verse 25, and Israel dwelt in the cities of the Amorites and Heshbon and all the villages, for Heshbon was the city of the king of the Amorites, okay? So that's kind of a big deal here for him. I'm sorry. Down here. All right? For Heshbon was the city of Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who had fought against the former king of Moab and had taken all his land from his hand as far as of Arnon. Some people think God used the people of Israel to spank this king for taking the other king's land. Okay? God can do lots of things at one time. Therefore, those who speak in the proverb, they say these words, come to Heshbon, let it be built, let the city of Sihon be repaired. For fire went out from Heshbon, a flame from the city of Sihon. It consumed Ar of Moab and the Lord of the heights of Arnon. Woe to you, Moab. You have perished, O people of Shamash. And that was the pagan god of Moab. That was their. We'll learn more about that with Balak a little bit later on. He has given us sons as fugitives, his daughters in captivity to the Sihon, the king of the Amorites. But we have shot at them. Heshbon has perished as far as Dibon, and we laid waste as far as Nophah, which reaches to Medeba. Therefore, thus Israel dwelt in the land of the Amorites. Then Moses sent spies out to Jazer. It took villages and drove out the Amorites who were there. What's amazing is the children of Israel, They're going to cover over here, okay, and a little bit later. But look how far north they went all the way up to Damascus. They traveled. Can you go to the next map real quickly? When we think of Israel today, we think this is Israel because of these lines. But Israel had all of this. You know, even up, they went all the way up here. And this will come into play, especially this area later on, okay? We'll talk, especially when we get to chapter 32, obviously not tonight at this rate, but remember these things, okay? And so the king of verse 33, then they turned and went by the way of Bashan, and Bashan is way up here, okay? You know, the Golan height, this is all Bashan. I've talked about that where, you know, when Syria came in, they had all kinds of mines here, and they didn't tell anybody where they were, so a lot of times Bashan is where Israel got a lot of hamburgers. They took the cows and just let them graze in there, and every once in a while, poof, you know. So, but the mine was taken care of. So Og, king of Bashan, went out against them and all his people to battle at Ediri, which is right over here. There's a famous battle. So look at where they're battling, all over, it's about 40 miles from here to here. They're in that area. Then the Lord said, I'm in verse 34 in case you're trying to catch up, Do not fear him, for I have delivered him into your hand with all his people, he and his land, and you shall do to him as you did in Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who dwelt in Heshbon. So they defeated him, his sons, and all his people, until there was no survivor left him, and they took possession of the land. Now, with all these battles we just talked about as we conclude here tonight, do you see why the portable cleansing system makes sense? Numbers chapter 19, how can we be a holy people while we're going through and dealing with this stuff? May I remind you also, we live in battles. You can still be a holy person in the midst of your spiritual battle. Father, thank you for today, and thank you for our tomorrows that we don't know. Today is sufficient. Lord, may we come to you as walking dead people, knowing that we need to be completely in on your cleansing. May we be patient enough to fully allow you to cleanse us. Prophetically, that seventh day for us is really when Jesus, you return to the earth your second time for your second coming. That's when that seventh day will be fully completed on the earth. But until then, you've cleansed us through your mighty work on the cross of Calvary. Thank you for that. Father, thank you for giving us this time to be together. Oh, we pray that if you would tarry throughout the weekend and we have time to assemble again this coming Sunday, that you would draw from the north, the south, the east, and the west, men and women that would come and allow our red heifer, Jesus Christ, to touch us again today and now, to cleanse us forevermore. We thank you, Jesus. Amen. 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 God bless you. May you enjoy the rest of your evening.